Blog Talk Radio. Hello.
Hi.
Pumpkin, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Sorry for the technical difficulty.
Oh, no, you're fine. I was a little worried. I was like, oh, my God.
I just saw your email. I was like, wait a minute. She said, I just called in. So I'm like flipping back. I said, okay, good. And I just saw it on here that you were on there. How are you tonight?
I am good. Glad we could connect and get everything straight.
Yeah.
Well,
let's start out, Ms. Smith, by you telling me about yourself first.
Okay. I am the coolest, most down-to-earth person there is. With me, pretty much what you see is what you get. There are no cut cards. I've learned to censor my tongue, but I don't tame my tongue, meaning that if something needs to be said, I know how to say it respectfully. I know how to say it assertive, but it's going to get said if I feel released to say it. Now, another thing about me is that, I mean, I'm like too much fun. You know what I mean? I'm a goofball. A lot of people, you know, if you get close to me in my circle, you see that side. You see me let my hair down. I just chill. So I'm a very very laid-back person, so even during this show, don't feel, like, afraid or timid to ask anything. I'm an open book. Like I said, no cut cards. That's me. That's the only way I could describe it, you know. But I'm a very humble person at that, too. Like, I'm a giver. I don't even know how to receive from people because I'm always giving so much.
Yeah, it's scary when you're always giving and somebody gives back to you and you're like, hold up, wait a minute. What are you doing?
Yeah, when somebody gives a compliment, I'm like, thank you. I don't know where you get that from. I appreciate it, but thank you. You know, like, what do I say other than thank you? You know what I mean? Do I say the same thing to them or, okay.
Exactly.
Well,
I know the feeling because I'm like that. I don't know how to accept compliments either. I have that problem too. Like, okay, what should I say? Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
No problem. I know, right? Like, no problem. I hope it helps, but for the most part, it's like I just don't know. I honestly don't know what to say because, like I said, I'm so used to giving out things that when it comes back, I'm just like, oh, thank you. You know, like I don't even expect it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you are the author of, just in case the audience doesn't know, of I Married Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. First of all, you guys, I'm sorry. I usually open up my show with Blog Talk Radio. Hello, listeners out there. This is Chocolate Lady 64. I'm hoping you guys are having a great night. Now, let's get back to it. I usually say that. You kind of caught me off guard, sort of, because I knew I was looking for you to call in, but I kind of got, you made me shake and get nervous. I don't usually do that.
Well, see what had happened. Well, see, I thought we were going on an 8, and so I was sitting by the phone. You know, I had just finished one interview, and I said, oh, I got to go. You know, I was talking to the person. I was like, I got to go. Because I got to call, you know, my girl. And so I kept calling and kept saying, you know, later, your show is not for an hour. And I'm like, No, yeah, when did we hit daylight savings time?
You know what? You're on the East Coast, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hour behind you.
Okay, all right. I got you.
Yeah. See, when it's 8 o'clock here, it's 9 o'clock where you're at.
And where are you guys at? Where are you based? Oh, Louisiana. Okay. All right. Well, we're good. We're on the same clock now.
Yeah, we are. That's right. Let's talk about I Married Satan. What gave you, how do you say that? What made you want to write this book? What gave you the inspiration to write this book?
Originally, I never thought I would be writing this type of book. You know, I had written a children's book, and I was all set to get that illustrated and all cute little, you know, potty training book. It was going to be so cute and adorable. I was going, you know, do my thing. And then as I was going through the situation, like years after I had already gotten married, it was a thing where I just started journaling. I was working with another gentleman on a magazine, and as we were working on articles for the magazine, it was like I just started writing. And I didn't have the title of the book. I just started writing, and just started journaling basically what had happened to me. And with all the situations that happened, before I knew it, it was like 100 pages, you know, and I'm like, ooh, okay. Then I went back and rewrote again, and I added more pages. So it just got to the point where I just kept writing, and before long, then the title came to me. And here you have it. I have this book that's getting ready to come out. It's currently being edited by a wonderful editor. And it's getting ready to come out, and here it is. I didn't want to. It just happened. God, it's actually divinely inspired by God. I guess, let me say it that way.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the story that made you go to this point where you wanted to write it. Like you said, you were journaling. What happened in the marriage that, you know what I'm saying, what triggered all this to the events to take place? What do you think triggered?
What triggered the marriage or triggered the writing or triggered the things that happened in the story?
Now, the situation. Where did all this come from to write the book? I mean, I know you went through the whole situation, but I want to know where that situation started from as far as the marriage, the ins and outs of the marriage.
Okay. The situation started from me carrying baggage from my childhood and my life in general into a situation. You know, I had met this guy at a funeral, well, at a repast, and he seemed like the perfect guy. You know, we all have in our mind the guy that we want to marry when we grow up and, you know, how our influences tell us the type of guy that we should be with and, you know, our parents add the flavor of, you know, we need to be with this one or that one. And so I met this guy, and he seemed to have everything I wanted. He had his own house. I was living at home with my mom. He had a truck. I had a little Ford Focus car. You know, he had the job, the college degree, so he said. I had the college degrees, working two jobs and in school, which was for real. And so it got to the point where then, you know, I was 25, and, like, I just went to my cousin's wedding, caught the bouquet. I kept catching bouquets, and I'm like, well, Zag, when do I get to walk down the aisle and be married? You know, when do I get to have the kids and, you know, give my mom her grandkids? She keeps to this day, she still stressed me about that. But anyway, so it's like I got to a point where I felt as though my biological clock was ticking. And so here comes this guy who seems like he is the one, like he is perfect, tall, dark, handsome, everything. He's the perfect package. So I jumped into getting married with him. Like, we met in April. We were married by August. Within like 2 or 3 weeks, well, I say about 3 weeks, I had already moved in with him. And the thing is, there was another girl whose stuff was there, and I didn't pay any attention. I asked him. He said it was his ex-girlfriend who had left and abandoned it, not realizing that when she left to go to work, he changed a lot. So it wasn't that she abandoned it. He basically put her out. And so, yeah. And so I didn't realize that when she came and knocked on the door, and we weren't married yet. She came and knocked on the door asking for her belongings. I was in his house, you know, and he went outside and was talking to her not to let her see me because he said she was going to try to fight me. Well, at that time, it didn't matter. But anyway, to make a long story short, when I was a little kid, I was molested. And that feeling, once that happens to you and you're violated, because the earliest I remember is about 5 years old, once that happens, it kind of makes your mind totally different as you're growing up. And when I say different, I mean it makes you into the type of person that is like, you know, you don't feel like, you feel dirty.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like, what's wrong with me? Why did this have to happen to me? Why me out of all these people? Why me? And you kind of start, I started molding my life activities and my life situations around what had happened. I had become a victim of my own situation. And so he played on that. He saw what was happening, and he was like, you know, he could sense it. And that's one thing that's important in relationships. That other person can sense, especially if it's somebody who's out to harm you or to manipulate you. They can sense when you don't feel good about yourself. They can sense when you have low self-esteem and when you're just like, okay, I'll settle and I'll tolerate anything that you give me because I'm so desperate to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so me feeling like I wasn't being loved and I felt like, you know, I was a mistake being born, all of these things played into the factor of me jumping in and getting married to this man because I saw a way out. Here I am, 25. I no longer have to live in my mom's house. I'm now living in my own house, quote unquote. You know, I can do my own thing. I'm grown. I got my freedom. Well, in actuality, I went from having freedom and being able to do whatever I wanted to do to being into a bondage situation.
Uh-huh.
So that's what kind of led up to me getting married and being with them.
Okay, now I want you to kind of elaborate on some of the events that took place, if you don't mind.
Uh-huh. Nope. Some of the things that happened, the book is made out of 9 chapters, but each one of those 9 chapters have so much meat and potatoes within that chapter. Some of the things that happened was, let's see, I can tell you about how I used to have to sleep with my identification and my money and my keys in my bed pillow because if I didn't, he would take them from me. You know, it could be my last a bit of money. He'll take it and say that I'm not paying bills or something stupid just so he'll have an excuse to take money from me and I won't have anything and have to come to him for money.
Uh-huh.
He's done things. He did things where he had the house phone. He would unplug and cut the wires and rewire everything so that the only time that the phone would ring is when it would ring on his cell phone. So I couldn't get any phone calls. Everything was forwarded and filtered through his cell phone. So if it was my mom or somebody, oh, here you go, telephone. If it was, I have 2 best friends, a male friend and a female friend. So if it was one of them, it was, oh, well, you can talk to her, but you can't talk to him. But then after a while, we were doing 3-way calls, and he realized that, so he cut that off. He had tore up pimp tags on my car after I was in a car accident, called the insurance company, told him it was all my fault. And that, you know, I need to be found liable, and he tried to drop me off the insurance. He did things where he came to my job. I was a temp, came in my job, took my boss's food, knocked it on the ground outside when we went to go get the food, took my wallet, went to the ATM, took $100 out, my last $100, took it out the bank, and the police told me there was nothing I could do because I was married to him.
Oh.
He had me served on my job with sheriff's pay, by the sheriff, because he said that I assaulted him. So he was trying to get me arrested on second-degree assault charges because he was doing things, and I had started calling the police, and I had started, like, the police knew us after a while. You know, like, they would take their time getting to us because they knew they were going to go through the same situation and be like, well, look, Mr. and Ms. such and such, you have to, you know, either one of y'all leave or chill out or something for the night. I used to cry so hard, where I used to have blood vessels that broke in my eye, busted in my eye, you know. And one time I was sitting in the kitchen. We had a window in our kitchen. I sat up in the kitchen cabinet, and I thought that he was going to hit me. So I grabbed a knife and actually hit him, not with the knife, but with my hand, and it busted a blood vessel in his eye. So he went to his job and told everybody, because I was so unfearful, but I was trying to protect myself because I'm in a corner up on, if you can imagine, by a kitchen sink on a cabinet just sitting there, and I was completely naked. It was time to fight back. He used to push me outside with just a T-shirt and socks on. And I'm not talking about summertime when it's like 100 degrees now. I'm talking about when it's like 30 degrees outside. Or he'll come in the room and open up windows in the middle of winter and cut the shower off and say, you go and talk to me. So I'm standing there freezing in the shower. You know it's already cold, even if it's hot outside. It's cold when you get out the water.
Man.
That's just some of it. That's like the first part of the book.
Man. Now, when did it start? When did you notice that he was going to, it was going to, that he was going to be violent towards you. When did that, I mean, when the first time he, like, slapped you or, you know, because sometimes the warning signs are there, but because we're so intrigued in the relationship and we're so into this person, we don't pay attention to it or we blow it off?
Mm-hmm. It actually started off with the verbal abuse before the physical abuse.
Okay.
He used to say things like, you know, you're a hippo and you're fat. You know, my wife is fat. You know, all types of things to put me down and, like, lower my self-esteem.
Uh-huh.
And then once it went from that, it went to him trying to push me out of trucks on highways, you know, while he took my purse. And I'm talking about while the vehicle is moving, while traffic is coming, not we're sitting still at, you know, in bumper-to-bumper traffic. I'm talking about pushing me out of vehicles. Now, I could say after the verbal stuff started, the physical started with, like, pushes. It started with, you know, slamming doors in my face or busting doors open. It started like that, and then it just quickly progressed. Like, to the point, I joined one church, I had a black eye, because he had hit me and knocked me on the ground on Thanksgiving with just a bra and panties on in front of my cousin.
Oh, my God.
So he was bold. He didn't care, you know. And so that's kind of like where it started, and it just, I mean, he stopped for a while, then he would start up again. He'll stop, and then he'll start up. And even, like, 2 weeks before we got married, this should have been a red flag right here when he decided, okay, you know what? We had an argument. You're going to sleep on the couch, but I'm going to come and get some anyway. You're going to give me what I want because I need to get this out of my system right now. And he tried to rape me. He had his hands around my throat and tried to rape me. It wasn't until I screamed and was, like, trying to push him off that he finally got up and just went upstairs. Mind you, all of this happened in the course of, what, not even 6 months?
So did you, and, you know, we always ask us the question, why didn't you get away?
Where was I going to go? First of all, I was ashamed because I was trying to save face. You know, I didn't want to go through the embarrassment of, oh, well, that didn't work out. Look, she failed. She got to go back home to her mama. I was in such a people bondage that I really cared at that time. The operative words in your sentences at that time, what people think and what they said. So I was kind of like, okay, I'm losing my security blanket because at this point I had started losing jobs, you know, so I was dependent on him for money, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, if I leave, I'm not going to have the house. I'm not going to have access to the truck. I'm not going to have, I put materialistic things and things that really had no substance above my own self.
And we do that. We have a habit of worrying about so much what other people think about our situation. So we want to keep it quiet, and we want to keep people out of it. And
that's
we do it to the closest people in our lives that really need to know what's going on, and we find ourselves, or that person finds himself, making it where it's hard for you to even communicate with those people that are close to you, that really you need at that time.
And it's funny you said that because that's what happened. My mother and I are very close. And what happened was he had made it so that he was going to talk to my mom, but I wasn't talking to her. So, of course, at this time, she and others, they actually thought I was the crazy one. You know, they thought that I was just like this psychotic, crazy girl that's just like going off and murking out every chance she gets, when really I'm sitting here like trying to bottle all this stuff in. Like they hear me yelling in the background, or they'll hear me on the phone, and he'll go pick up the phone. And then we're in this shouting match on the phone. You know, so it was like I couldn't get close to people because, again, you know, he had, started trying to put a wedge in between it. But my mom had that maternal instinct where she was able to still reach out to me. She'll find a way to get in contact with me, you know. And so after a while, it was actually her that kept encouraging me and giving me the strength once she realized what was really going on, to actually get out. And I stayed with her for a while until I got my own place. And it's now been 6 years, and I've been able to just, you know, finally be settled and be calm and be content.
So how did your mom, what did your mom do to get you out? How did she do that?
First, she did a lot of praying. Then she did a lot of, like, trying to converse with me and just talk to me through the situation. And I still didn't want to listen because, you know, when you're in a relationship, especially when you're in a marriage, it's supposed to be that spouse comes first before everybody else except God. And what happened was that I was still putting him first because I was like, all right, I got married. I have to make this work. I can't do divorce. I have to, you know, be in this marriage. So she started talking to me and really giving me, like, a straight talk. Like, you know he's trying, you know he might poison you. You know he may kill you. And I'm like, it was a reality check that I was like, ooh, I think it's really time to really get out of this situation.
Ooh, your story is devastating, and I am that you did get out of it because I think it would have went to another level. You know what I'm
and
saying?
You're totally right. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying it's good that you did get out of it because it sounded like that whole situation was escalating into a whole nother direction.
Mm-hmm. And I tell people all the time, I say, you know, if I hadn't gotten out when I did, I may not be sitting here talking to you today.
Exactly.
And the reason I say that is because I walked in a room and saw him spinning a gun on the floor, you know, not knowing if he was going to kill himself or kill me. And I'm not talking about a little baby 9 or a little, you know, 36. I'm talking about a sawed-off shotgun, the big gun. You know, I mean, I saw this man kill dogs and say that I killed them. So basically, because the dogs were protecting me, we had pit bulls. They were protected. Like, the dog would sit there and watch him to make sure he didn't come at me. Same thing when we had Rottweilers. The dogs always protected me. I guess they sensed it. And I saw how he killed dogs. He put a knee high in one of them's food. He starved dogs to death. Just to say that I did it. Yes, he starved dogs, meaning no food. They stayed in their kennels eating their own feces. That's how serious this was. So if he could do that to a dog who he loved, who won championship trophies for him, what could he do for me? Just some chick that he met a couple of months ago.
Yeah. Whew. Lord. He had some serious issues way before you came into the picture.
Most definitely. But see, he messed up, and he showed me where his medical records were. And so when I left for good, I took him with me, and I actually sat in the bathroom for hours reading through his whole medical chart that he had stolen from a hospital before because he was in the military. So I'm sitting there reading through it. That's when I found out he had bipolarism, hammer toes, you know, all of this stuff that if I had taken time to get to know him ahead of time, I would have seen and eventually known about. I didn't know what bipolarism was. I do now, you know, but it's just, if I had taken the time to really get to know him, then I would have been able to see some of these things.
Exactly. Now, I know you don't contact him now. Do you guys ever meet up on each other or, you know, anything like that?
I actually saw him, and it's so funny you asked me that, in the last month I've seen him twice out of in 6 years I've seen him, well, 2.5 times, because one time when he was stealing court papers out my mailbox, I saw him, but I didn't know that was him. Because, you know, how many green trucks, you know, are out there, whatever the case may be. So I just thought it was somebody with the same truck as him. Didn't pay attention until later on. But I saw him recently because one thing I forgot to tell you is that our families live next door to each other still.
Oh, my
our
God.
Grandparents, yes, our grandparents live next door to each other for, like, my entire life for many years.
Okay?
So when I go visit my grandfather, and he just happened to be over there visiting his grandmother, who do I see? So the last time, we actually thought he was following me home because when I pulled out the driveway, all of a sudden he pulls out the driveway. And we end up going the same way until he saw that my mom, because she noticed it too, she was like, wait a minute, why did he leave when she left? So she started following, then he turns off. So, but other than that, like before, I couldn't look him in his face. Right now, I'm to the point where I could say, you know what, I forgive you, it's nothing. Now, that's a very difficult thing to say because in my mind, I haven't forgotten what's happened, but I haven't held on to it. If I hold on to it and I don't forgive him, he still has power over me. But because I released it, it's now on him. He has to carry that burden. He has to stand before God, not me, and get judged on that. So.
So you said he was in the military?
Yes.
Oh.
And he had actually gotten put out the military. Again, I found this in the records. He got put out the military because the girl he was dating before, apparently she had some keys, either hers or his. I don't know the whole story. But he said that he just touched her hand. But I think it was a lot more to it, obviously, because he got put out the military because of it.
Okay, so that means that that was going on prior to his military time.
Oh, yes. And I think because
he shouldn't have came in the first place, in other words, is what I'm trying to say.
No, And I think that's why they, you know, started really doing mental evaluations on top of physical evaluations, because he's one of those people who he already had issues. Like, when he left to go into the military, into the Navy, he didn't even tell his family. He just left. You know, so he already had other issues, and they found out when he was in basic training.
Ah.
So, yeah.
See, and that's what's so bad about it, is when you meet these people and you don't know, and you haven't done your background check on them, or you know, watch them, how they do stuff, you don't realize it, that you're dealing with monster in the end, because that's what he was. He was a monster, you know. Somebody was with some really serious issues that he never got taken care of before he came, or before he even met you. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
And I know what you're saying. I totally understand what you're saying when you meet these people and you be with them and you think you love them, or you really truly do love them, even with their flaws, because, you know, it says for worse, for better or for worse in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the violence that gets involved, then that's where the decisions have to be made in a whole different way. You have to look at things differently. And it's hard to just walk away. That's the reason why I asked you that, because I wanted to hear your answer to that, because it is not easy to just walk away from the abuse. You know, it's not easy, because they always seem to know how to find you, and they'll tell you, I'm going to find you. And the idea that he didn't take that next step and you're still here, and it's because of God coming in and making sure that you were here to tell your story, is the reason why you are here. You know, we don't take all that in consideration. I've had the opportunity or the experience in dealing with a friend of mine that was in domestic violence. And that's the reason why I asked, how do you find out when it started?
Mm-hmm.
With their situation, which was so different, was she had a habit of hitting him, you know, just tapping him. You know, like when you're talking and playing with people, you tap them. And I used to always stop hitting him, because he's going to hit you back. And they went through a 7-year, very, very violent marriage for 7 years. But it started out with her hitting him. And he started hitting her back. And I just remember I was in the middle of them. I got my nose busted trying to break them up. So I know what you're saying with the domestic violence and trying to get the kids out in between them fighting. I'm taking them to my house, so if they don't tear up something, at least the kids are not there, even though I should have been more concerned about her. But she wasn't listening, so I would get the kids and take the kids to my house. And guess what? They were military, because I'm prior military. They were both military soldiers that was doing this. And his commander would tell him to come move in the barracks. She'd stay in the house. And then 3 or 4 or 5 days later, he's back at the house. I go over there, and he's back at the house. So it was back and forth, back and forth. And then you don't realize the impact. And it's blessed. Do you have any children?
No, we don't. I still don't.
It's blessed that you didn't have children in between, because she had some hard times with her children as they got older. And they kind of finally matured to the point where the problems are gone and they've matured and moved on. But they went through some serious trouble because they saw this on a constant basis. You know, you're never prepared for that. You're really never prepared for that. You know,
and that's the thing, if the kids don't get help, then if it's a boy child or a girl child, they're going to think it's okay for that to occur. Or even if they don't approve of it, it's in them. They've seen it. It's a part of who they are at that point. So when they get in a relationship and a spouse may be, you know, giving them love taps, they're going to react and remember, well, daddy used to knock mommy on her behind.
Exactly.
You know, so they'd be like, don't touch me. Don't play with me. You know, I'm going to end up hitting you for real. And then after a while, and I do believe, even though I do not condone domestic violence at all, let me just say that, black and white, there are times when we can push somebody to that point.
Exactly.
You know, how many people are going to sit there and let you just constantly hit on them, you know, push on them before they react? It's a human nature just to react. And so it was funny you said about your friend, like, tapping on him, because my ex and I, we were doing love taps driving from the airport that morning when he gave me my black eye.
Oh.
We were playing, and then he got serious, and he was kind of like showing off, you know, being macho, and knocked me on my behind on the floor. I've never had that happen before, except for by him.
Man. Ooh. See, that's why you got to know when to stop, when to play, and when not to. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're young, you're married, you're enjoying the marriage and everything, you don't never think that it's going to go to the point where, you know, this is going to happen. Now, we were talking about earlier how the ideal that you lived to see all this and that it didn't go to that point. I have another friend. She lives in Texas. She had a friend, one of her next-door neighbors, actually, when she was about to leave, after the marriage had dissolved, she came back home to divide the stuff up in the house, and she brought her. And he came, too. He came in his own car. And she said something out the way, and he beat her. He killed the other guy that was with her, helping her move her stuff. But she wound up in a – and then while she was in a coma, she had a baby, okay?
Oh, wow.
She passed away. I think she's been dead now for about maybe a year and a half, 2 years. But she was in a coma for that long, for about 3 years almost, before she actually passed away. But he hit her so hard, he killed the one guy. And you know what he did it with? A dumbbell. He had some weight.
Wow.
They were moving the stuff. And like I said, from what I'm understanding, she got upset and said something, and he just picked it up and knocked the crap out of her. And when he hit her, the guy was trying to help her, and he hit him, and he stayed on the respirator for a while, and his family kind of released him. And he passed away. So now, and guess what? He was a deputy sheriff in the jail.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Locked up for life. And from what I'm hearing, he has no remorse. He, you know, he doesn't feel like he did anything wrong. You know?
And you know, it's so funny you said that, because my ex's sister, she, when I had gotten him arrested, finally, and I was crying while I was getting him arrested, because I don't believe in calling the police. You know, I grew up in the straight hood. You don't call the police unless you absolutely have to, you know. And it was a thing where I felt bad getting my husband locked up,
mm-hmm.
you know. And even when my family was out there, they're like, why are you crying? Look at all that he's done to you. He mm-hmm. needs to go to jail for a night. And I was so stressed out the next morning, like, oh, my God, when he comes home, what's going to happen? Is he going to mm-hmm. try to kill me? Should I go to the house? I'm calling all day trying to get status reports. And he came home that night and pretended like nothing even happened. And I'm like, I think that scared me more. That he was being nicer.
Yeah. But see, that's
you
what...
Know.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's what bipolar does. That's
mm-hmm.
that's affection. You're up one day and you're down the next. He's being angry one day, the next day it's like nothing ever happened. And he probably wasn't on any type of medication either, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
He wasn't taking any. Like, I had no clue that he even, like, I knew that his actions showed that he was bipolar, but I had no idea about, you know, the magnitude of it. So I actually started Googling it and researching it to find out, like, okay, yeah, this is what I was really dealing with, you know?
Yeah, and he probably, and with him not getting the proper help, and like I said, it could have gone the other direction, and thank God that it didn't, and that you got out when you did. I mean.
People wonder why I praise God so much. That's why, because I'm alive, just because I'm still here. And
exactly.
It's so funny that you were saying about me getting out. When there's a like a judicial case search thing where you can look up people's court cases.
Uh-huh.
And one day it had to be God that told me to look him up. And come
uh-huh.
to find out that whoever this new girl is that he is or was with, she just filed a restraining order against them and a peace order. So he hasn't stopped. And this is 6 years later.
Oh, my God.
So there was some before me, there was me, and then there's some after me now.
Okay, now also in your book, you found a surprise that you found out that he was married?
When I filed for my divorce, he filed for an annulment. And I'm like, how in the world are you going to get an annulment after almost 5 years of marriage?
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't get a lawyer because on my court papers it says all I want is out. You can have everything. I don't even want anything from you but myself.
Uh-huh.
And when his lawyer kept like stalling and procrastinating with the cases and extending it, I'm like, for what? All he has to do is sign a paper. We're done. Give me my name back. Come
uh-huh.
to find out, when we stood in front of the judge, stood in front of the licensee to get our license to get married, we both said we were single, not related, you know, all of that natural stuff you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he lied. Come to find out, not only was he married, But he'd been married for double digits, like 12 to 14 years. And the thing is that whoever he was married to, it was when he was in the military, and she was fleeing for him because I had started finding other females' numbers. Like, he told me he was divorced. He didn't tell me that he was still married. He told me he had been divorced, and he had gotten married for convenience or something stupid because he was young, you know, something crazy. And It sounded believable, so I found her number one day. And I called, and whoever her new husband is or whatever was like, no, she's not here. She doesn't want to talk to y'all. So I think that she thought that I was trying to help him find her, when in actuality, I wanted to talk to her to find out, you know, like, what happened? You know, if he's such a wonderful man, how come you're not still married to him or with him? That's when I found out I didn't find out until after my case was coming to an end that he was still married. And then he pushed his case through in a different county so that we didn't have to stand before the judge and it come out. So he's still walking around free.
Oh, my God. And he's still married, right, to the other chick?
That I don't even know, to be honest with you. I don't know because he said that he thought he was divorced and that, you know, he hasn't heard from her or seen her in years, so he thought the marriage was over. Again, that could be another lie. It could be somewhat true. I don't know. I stopped following him. I let him do his thing. I do my thing, and we do nothing together.
Wow.
And so many people ask me, is the book a real story? I'm like, there is paper trails to document everything that I'm saying. This book is 150% true, except for the names in the situation.
You said you had to change that a little bit, huh?
Only reason I changed it is because he would still think I'm trying to get back at him. And he would probably try to do something stupid and crazy, like, you know, try to sue me or something like that. So
that's
I just changed the names.
You're right. You're right. And he can't do it with that. You're right. And that's something about.
He could do it if I was being slanderous, but it's not. It's facts that can be proven. That's the definition of defamation of character. If you're saying something that's not true and messing up somebody's character, that's defaming them. But if you're stating the facts, like, look, this is what happened. I can prove it. If you need me to, go down to the courthouse, pull the records, you will see that I am telling the truth. So I changed the names. No names. No problem.
Okay. Now, can you tell me, with the domestic violence, how do you do a lot of speaking engagements?
Well, it's starting to pick up, believe it or not. Because my biggest platform right now is discussing about the importance for there to be a national and international database so that, you know, if somebody gets married in California and you're in Maryland, you can know that they got married and they are not divorced. And there also needs to be a database, just like there are molesters and child abusers and, you know, sex offenders who have a database and they have to register in the state. There
exactly.
should also be some type of database for people that commit domestic violence crimes because somebody could kill somebody in, let's say, New York, and then they can move to, like, Nebraska or, you know, Nevada or somewhere and just start a whole new life and do it again. So there needs to be some type of trail.
Oh, that is awesome. That is so awesome because we don't have.
No. So you don't know, like, if you met somebody and, you know, they've been, like, murdering people for years and they've been able to cover it up, how would you know that?
Yep.
I'd rather be able to go to a database or a site, type their name in, and be like, oh, wait a minute, I can't deal with you. You know, my life is more important than, you know, you being, oh, nah, I can't do that. Mm-mm.
Now, they do have, like, the criminal background check. It's called Verify, WeVerify.com or something. Have you heard that one before?
I haven't, but in the state of Maryland, we have Maryland Judiciary Case Search, where you can look up every court case that a person has in that state. And I think New York or another state has it as well. You can see what the person got locked up for. And I'm talking about details. Like, it'll say peace order, domestic violence, criminal charges. It'll tell you this stuff in it. And if it's a whole bunch, if it's the same person that you're dating and it's a whole bunch of different defendants or different plaintiffs on there, actually plaintiffs, then you know that's not the person for you.
Oh, but you know what? Some women, well, he's not doing that now. He doesn't treat me like that right now. And because we're eager to be loved, and like you said earlier about the self-esteem. And we don't understand how important as women, how we need to understand ourselves first. And when we don't understand ourselves, anybody can come in and take over. And that's just how it is. They mentally, emotionally, physically take over how we feel and how we see ourselves because we're not recognizing how we are. We don't recognize it. We're so busy working on the outside, we don't look at what's going on. Because you can be beautiful. You can have all that you have, but inside you're hurting. You're messed up, emotionally torn down, beat down, and you see this knight in shining armor, and he comes along, and then guess what? He adds on to the abuse that you're already feeling about yourself. And you got a big mess. And then like you said earlier about carrying that baggage, you know the song by Erykah Badu called Bag Lady? That song always comes to my mind when you're carrying all that baggage to that next relationship and to that next relationship, and you never get out. It's like you dug a big hole for yourself, and you never get out. And sometimes the end result is death. You know, we don't get that. And I love to encourage women to believe in themselves. If you can't believe in nothing else, believe in yourself first and foremost. And then once you believe in yourself and you know who you are, then you can take who you are, and then you can offer that to the other person because you're very self-assured of who what you can do with the marriage and what you can bring to the marriage opposed to taking away. You know, we don't do that, and it's so and you see these people every day. You know, I talk to them all the time, and I'm just amazed at how women really devalue themselves. They don't really believe in themselves. They really don't.
And you know what else we do? We look for validation and somebody else to complete us. And the biggest thing that for anybody I try to tell them is don't get in a relationship for somebody to make you complete.
Exactly.
Already be complete. Know who you are. Know what you want. Have your goals lined out. You know, start accomplishing those goals. Because it's not enough just to write it. Even the Bible says write the vision and make it plain. Okay, now that you've wrote it, it's time to act upon it. You know, you can't just stand still and expect to be successful. And so if you're going to get with a man or a woman and, you know, you want them to complete you and make you happy, you have to first start and be happy already. I have my best moments when I'm sitting at home in my house chilling, just me and God.
You know,
I've learned how to have a bubble bath by myself. The things that you want somebody else to do to you, do for yourself. Cook yourself a romantic dinner. Light candles. Be by yourself. Play music for yourself.
Exactly. That is so true. That is so true. And we don't do it. We have to have our girlfriends around. We have to have our buddies around. We always got to be in the crowd. It's got to be a whole bunch of people around us all the time to make us feel like we're complete when you're really not. You're not. Because you don't need all of that. I love being by myself, and I'm married. I still love being by myself.
And you know, so I think another thing that kind of piles on the dirt on us as women is the fact that even though they say people in general are like crabs in a barrel, we as women are. If you see somebody that you think looks better than you, don't think about them. Don't put level. Let whatever vibe they have, let them bring you up.
Hello?
Self, you're beautiful. Who else is going to tell you? Look in the mirror. Sometimes I dare every woman to look in the mirror and just be like, you're a cutie pie.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so then when somebody else tells you, you're not quick to fall in a bed because somebody done told you that you're cute. You hear that stuff.
Yeah. And like I said, when it comes to all the beauty on the outside, to me, I don't have anything against it. I don't consider my – I never thought I was a pretty girl. I never did. As a little girl, I just never did it. And as I got older and I noticed that people were actually looking at me in a different light and liking my personality, it didn't have to be about what I look like on the outside, my face and all that. It didn't matter anymore. I needed to love me for me. And it's hard when you grow up and you don't love yourself. But and then when you do get to the point in your life where, okay, now I really realize how important it is for me to love me so that what I got I can give to others. And we don't – I don't know. Us African-American women in general, I can't talk about any other race or woman because I'm not.
Uh-huh.
African-American women, we don't – sometimes we can be fake with each other and that hurts. You know what I'm saying? We don't
know
how to with each other. It's easy for us to pretend like all this is going on in our lives. You know, we got this big, glamorous life. When reality is, we're hurting inside, and we're too embarrassed sometimes to, like me and you talking. And I want to tell you something, but I'm too embarrassed to tell you that it's going on in my life. You know what I'm saying? When you probably can be the best person to tell me what I can do with that situation, but
that's
I can't do it because I'm too embarrassed. Because we don't want everybody to know that all this, we got this darkness going on. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's real funny because a clown can put on makeup.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but that doesn't mean that that clown is happy underneath. They paint a smile on their face. And that's what we do as women. We put on the mascara, the mask, you know, we put on the foundation. We dress ourselves up on the outside when inside we tore up, broke, busted, and disgusted. But because we're so worried about what people around us are saying and thinking, we're in like a people bondage. I refuse. Once somebody actually spoke that into my spirit and I grabbed on hold of what being in people bondage was, I refuse to go back. So I could care less if you think this outfit is cute. As long as I know it's clean and it matches and I think it looks cute, if you think it looks cute, that's a bonus, you know. But as long as I know that I'm clean and decent and leaving out the house and I can hold my head up, that's what's important to me. And most of the time, I don't even wear makeup. You know, just go natural sometimes, you know. And it's like we as women need to learn how to take off the mask and just start being real and be real with each other. Don't envy that sister. Go talk to her. She might have something that you need, but you are getting ready to miss out on your blessing because you're too afraid to go talk to her, or you're too prideful to go talk to her, or you're turning your nose up at her because she may look like she has it going on. But the thing is that we got to realize is that just be like you're her, and she could be worse off than you.
Exactly.
But she has that confidence in herself, and she loves herself enough to say, you know what, I'm not going to worry about it. Regardless of what it looks like, I'm going to get through this. That's the difference.
Yes, that you are so right. You are so right about that. I wish we could, I wish African-American women, we're in 2010, and we should even feel the way that we feel toward each other. You know, we really should, just embrace each other, love each other. You know, everybody's got a short.
You still there?
Yeah, Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Oh, she hung up. She's got to call me back. Oops. Okay, she's trying to call me back, you guys. We had a little technical difficulty here. Let's see if I can get her back on. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Sorry,
you going in
that.
And out? You having problems? Hello?
Storm's over here in Maryland, so I don't know if that's being a cause of our...
It's storming? Can you hear me?
I'm doing something right now, so.
Huh? Hello? We lost our interviewee, Miss Smith. We're trying to get her back on. I'm sorry, you guys.
Here.
Bear with us.
All right, I'm outside, so I'm here now.
Okay.
There we go. We'll just stand at the front door for the rest of the interview. Okay. Sorry about that, y'all. You know, things happen. This is real, real live radio, so.
That's all right. Believe me, that's fine. It doesn't bother me not one bit. And I'm quite sure anybody who's been on the radio know these little things happen.
Anybody that has a cell phone knows these little things happen, so.
You know what? I was going to do it on my cell phone, do the interview on my cell phone. I said, wait a minute, hold up. I'm not going to do that. Whole thing. I said, no, that's all right. I'll just do it on my home phone.
But
okay.
You know what that was? That was nothing but the devil. Somebody's about to hear something that's going to help them get set free, and he did not want that to happen. So We just need to go ahead and just be happy despite of and still give God glory, because that's what's about to happen. That's what that situation was about.
Exactly, exactly. Now, Ms. Smith, tell me more. Okay, you said you're just starting the speaking engagement?
Yes.
What you got coming up right now? What is some of the events that you got coming up?
I know some things are starting to be scheduled tentatively for Domestic Violence Month, but also on the third Sunday in August, I'll be speaking at New Birth Baptist Church in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
That's like another home church for me.
Okay.
And really, I don't know. I just stay in a ready state. You know, I just keep whatever God wants me to say at that point. I never know when a speaking engagement is going to come up, honestly, and I just be ready. You know, whatever needs to be said will be said.
Okay. Now, are you going to do a book tour once your book comes out?
I am. Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to let you let everybody know where can they purchase your book.
Well, it's in production right now. I have one of the best editors in the world. I just met her. We ended up going to the same church. And long story short, the best thing to do right now is to become a friend of mine on Facebook. LaDonna
okay.
M. Smith. I'm not promoting my Facebook page, but I'm just saying that's the best way. I do have a website, but we're redoing everything. You know, I got to add all these wonderful blog talk shows and all those wonderful media appearances and everything on there. But the best thing to do is hit me up on Facebook, LaDonna M. Smith, and at that point, you know, I'll keep you posted, and you can pre-order the book now if you want. You can, you know, send me an email. I love keeping in contact with people. Just hit me up. I love people.
Okay. Okay, one more question. Now,
sure.
If there is a possibility that you
uh-huh.
can do real good traveling, would you leave out your area? Because I know Maryland and Washington, D.C. is all in the same kind of, in the same facility almost. Would you leave
planning.
Out?
I am planning. I want to get on a plane. If you guys want me to come to Louisiana, I'm coming. California, Nebraska, I'm coming. Put it that way. As God opens the doors for me to fly out, I'll be there.
Awesome. So I got some work to do on my end, huh, to get you here, huh?
There you go. All you got to do is give me a date. I have a wonderful cousin that works at one of the airlines. You know, I'll watch her kids for a couple of weekends, and I'll have a ticket, so let's do it. Or I'll drive it. Let's go. I'm ready to go. I'm ready. I've been in Maryland all my life, except for when I lived in Philly for a little bit, but I am ready to, wherever I need to go, to spread the word and to help people. Let's get it done.
Now, another thing before we go, we got 7 more minutes.
Okay.
To talk on domestic violence, I want you to kind of give us an idea of what domestic violence, how important for us to know the signs and be proactive when it comes to domestic violence.
Okay, I want to tackle that from two different spectrums really quickly. First of all, if you notice that somebody, or you sense or feel that somebody may be in a domestic violence situation, let's back it up. Domestic violence is anything that's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, any type of abuse that is detrimental to your health. If it's not building you up and encouraging you and it's bringing you down and making you feel like less of the person that you are, it is a form of domestic violence. Domestic violence does not necessarily have to be just with your partner. It can be your family. It can be anybody that's close to you. That's why it's domestic. It's not, you know, public. It's domestic. It means it's close to you. So if you are sensing that somebody may be, you know, coming to church or going to work and then having to go home and put on boxing gloves for 18 rounds before they can go to bed, ask questions. You don't have to ask them directly and say, you know, is he beating you up or is she beating you up? You can just ask questions around it or be there for that person. Say, hey, you want to go do lunch? Let's talk. Or, hey, you want to hang out? Whatever the case may be, whatever your platform and your opportunity presents, whatever opportunity presents itself through you, utilize it. Then conversely, if you're somebody who is in this situation, if you're somebody who's looking for a way out, first of all, if it gets too much, don't be afraid to dial 911. You know, that's what they're here for. That's why if you work, you're paying your tax dollars to be protected, to be served and to be protected. It's hard sometimes because you don't want to see that person getting handcuffed. But if it's a matter of your life or that person spending a night or a week in jail, I'm sorry, it's not an option for me. You know, and obviously, if you're in that situation now, there's a reason and a purpose why you're here. God has kept air in your nostrils for a reason. So, therefore, you need to figure out what your purpose is, and you need to find the strength. And I don't have a problem with people calling me. I don't care where you are. If you don't have anybody else you can talk to, pick up the phone and call the doctor. You know, and it's not that I'm trying to sell you a book. I'm going to try to encourage you to find that inner strength that you need, you know, to find that secure source. If you need to be able to find a place to stay, fine. We'll get on Craigslist or we'll get on Apartment Shoppers or whatever the case may be, or look for a room to get you a place to stay. Whatever the steps it needs to be, you need to make a plan and get out. Because ultimately what could happen is one or two things. Either you and or your children are not going to be able to live to be able to tell your story to somebody else and help them get out, or you're going to be in a situation where forever you're going to constantly be torn down. You know, you might get your teeth knocked out your mouth. You might have to walk around with black eyes. You might end up having other bodily issues end up occurring. It's never too late to get out. And I don't care how much they say they love you. If they love you, they wouldn't hurt you in that way.
Okay. And that is so true. That's some very good information. Now, tell me real quick, in Maryland, how do they handle domestic violence? What are some of the laws, briefly, on how they handle domestic violence? Because I know it's handled differently everywhere you go.
Maryland is no tolerance at this point because so much has been happening and so many people have been getting killed. If you dial 911, somebody is going to jail. Whoever they can prove has been the abuser is going. If you have a scratch, it could be a small scratch that you may have been, you know, scratching yourself and you scratch it too hard. If it looks like it could be inflicted by another person, you're gone. Somebody is going, and they're going to encourage you to make it happen. They might give you a few chances, but after a while, they're going to say, okay, look, you need to find another solution, you know, and the apartment complexes, they're not going to deal with it. You're going to be evicted because they're going to get tired of police coming around. So it's very much zero tolerance. As much as you turn on the news and hear about it, it's becoming more and more zero tolerance.
See, I know in Kansas City, in Kansas State, they're zero tolerance. Here, I don't know how they work it here, but we have a lot of domestic violence here. We have it where we have a lot of crime where the killing actually happens here. It's higher here than most states are for some reason. They actually go through the killing part. And then we have also a higher rate where they kill themselves too.
Mm.
So it's kind of different, and I hadn't really paid too much attention to. I usually do a lot about every other state. I mean, I have a national hotline that I let people call for Louisiana, or I give them the information on Louisiana's hotline. But it's good to know all of the hotlines, no matter where you live at. It's good to know all of them. And there is a website, and I'm sorry, I did domestic violence maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, and there is a website you can go to, and it has all the hotlines for each state and all the laws and how the judicial system works in each state. And it's a very, very informative website. Are you familiar with that website?
I know a couple of different national organizations. I think it's NADVC or something like that. I know the acronyms, but if you hit Google and type in domestic violence organizations, you'll get them. And one website has the list of everything in every state. You know, so you go online, just Google. We Google everything else. You might as well Google and, you know, save your life, too.
That's true. That is so true.
Right. I'm going to have to charge Google for that commercial.
Exactly. Well, Miss LaDonna, I thank you very, very good pleasure. It was a great pleasure, for having you on my show. And your story is a great story. And I'm really wishing you the best with your book. And you will be hearing from me again. I promise you that, okay?
Thanks. I really appreciate it. And I love your platform. Keep doing what you're doing. I just want to encourage you because I know you're doing big things. You might not always get the recognition, but keep doing what you're doing. Keep pressing, and you'll get there.
Thank you very much, sweetie. And
you're welcome. You too. Thank you. And thank you to all your listeners. Keep supporting the show, guys. It can only get better.
Bye-bye.
All right? Bye.
God, I almost fucked my face.